I'm on the road to recovery, step by step.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Spencer's going to come up, and he has a joke for us.
Alrighty. Hey, Spencer, alcoholic joke teller. And I got one from A Rabbit Walks Into a Bar, the best jokes and cartoons they also found in A.A. Grapevine. All right. If you tell a person that there are 270,678,934,341 stars in the universe, he'll believe you. But if you tell an alcoholic to stay away from that first drink, he has to make a personal investigation.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jay. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that will make noise and might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So if everybody's ready, we can start the meditation.
Please,
my prayer now. If you don't know it, it's up on the screen there. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I have asked Jason to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Jason. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing fellowship of those thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, the friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom be accomplished by years of self-discipline. With unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode or just turn them off. So we have Peter doing session one tonight. I'll keep this brief. What I do know about Peter is that he continues to show up for AA regardless of how many years of sobriety he has. So let's welcome Peter.
Okay. You don't know that much about me. We're getting feedback up here. Can you hear it? Yeah. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm getting PTSD. I was at a conference Saturday, and the entire talk was feedback for an hour. It was just god-awful. So I hope it doesn't happen tonight. Before we get going, it's really important to mention Mike Chase is away, reminded me of this, that this group is 10 years old this month. And I don't know if I was the first guy up doing a 12-step series in the old location, but it was June 2014. And we had the Monday and Thursday meeting there. That Monday night meeting, a lot of faces have changed, but there was at least 100 people in that Monday night meeting for the big book walkthrough. And Thursday night there was standing room only in that church. They had a something like this in a side room, and they had to bring out extra chairs. It was always really crowded. So I just want to congratulate the group and all the men and women who get this thing going every Monday and Thursday night. It's great. There are some places, this is my favorite group to be at. It always has been. It looks fabulous. The trusted servants are wonderful. There's great camaraderie. I'm very comfortable here as well. There's some other places I really like visiting down here that I'm just comfortable. You know, those meetings you walk in the door and you just feel it's just a good place to be. 12-Step House is another place I really enjoy going to, and there's a great meeting in Wednesday night, and Wednesday night in Boca, a big book meeting. So I love solution-based meetings, and I'm just grateful to be still going 10 years later, sharing these 12-week step series. I'm from up north, and you don't have that up there. In fact, you don't have a lot of speaker meetings up north. You have mostly closed discussion meetings, 15, 20 minutes, and it goes around the room. So when I got down here, Florida is very much like the West Coast, California, where there's tons and tons of speaker meetings. And the 12-step series is probably like 5 going on tonight somewhere down here. So it's really cool, and I'm glad to be here. June 23rd, 1988, God separates me from alcohol. I'm very grateful for this gift of sobriety and grateful where God has brought me to. I'm grateful for my relationship with God, no better or worse than anyone else. I'm just very grateful. It's I know, if you will, my God. I still don't understand my God, and he's kept it that way. I'll never understand God's ways. I just can tell you experientially that I have a God in my life. I have someone I pray to that I trust and rely upon with flavoring of skepticism and doubts, because we all get that's the human condition. But I know my God. I know who I'm praying to in the morning. I have a point person I go to for all things. Bill says, turn all things into the Father of light presides over us all. I do that. And I don't say that from up here. And I've said this from a million podiums, and if you're new, it's going to sound awfully lame to hear from someone who's been here a number of years, but I really don't have a life. Scripture says if I try to find my life, I will lose. If I lose for his sake, I find it. I don't have a life. Whenever I try to make my life, I usually get lost. My life belongs, quite frankly, to God and Alcoholics Anonymous, and because of that, the payoff is, I can speak for my wife, a very full and abundant life, a very purpose-driven life. We have places to go. We're meeting people. We have direction, and it seems to be whenever I try to get my hands around life, I have to pause because I become agitated and doubtful. That's why the 11th step says that. So I like to consider myself a member of good standing in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's quite frankly, nothing comes before recovery, no matter what it is, because if I put it before my recovery, I'm going to lose it anyway. It'll just get away from me. It'll get toxic, and I'll be the carrier of toxic stuff, because life has to be on my terms anymore. One of the most difficult things I faced in getting going in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988 is that my life is none of my business, which flies in the face of everything I was taught as a kid, especially as a man. Get your hands around life, take the bull by the horns, and AA says, no, don't do any of that stuff. Because whenever I do that, I make a mess. Today's solutions become tomorrow's problems. And it's scary letting go. And I don't mean being apathetic, but say, okay, God, I did everything I can. Now I release it to you. It's scary as heck sometimes. But if I look at the whole picture of my life, God's always beyond my cleverest plans. So my job in Alcoholics Anonymous is, once I get to this fellowship, is get involved in the program inside the fellowship with the sponsor. And hopefully I get traction where everything, I see everything through the soul rather than through this mind. And I don't get the restless, irritable, and discontented stuff, the RIDs, my sponsor would call them. Restless, irritable, and discontented, you got the RIDs. Because what begins to happen is I become immersed in me. I'm the most important thing, my stuff. I'm constantly involved in my stuff. And it isolates me from you. It isolates me, if you will, from God. It isolates me. And my aliveness now is deadened because I'm consumed with me and none of it's good. No one's doing what I want. Everyone's got it wrong. And if only this and if only that. And when that spring gets tight enough and the thought stream becomes paramount, there's an old default button that says double vodka. And that's what I do because I'm an alcoholic. And because we say it a lot in this group, too, you've heard me say it a billion times, a recovered alcoholic today. But I can get unrecovered if I stop doing the thing. If I always do what I always did, I'm always going to get what I always got. So if I stop doing this for whatever reason, life is important, the job is more important, the money is more important, whatever it is, I start to get away from the very thing that's feeding my soul. I'm alcoholic. I drink alcohol. That's what I do. So even though we talk about being recovered, it's not cured. I might get to transcend a lot of life circumstances, but never transcend alcoholism. One day God's going to give me my last breath, and I'd rather die with alcoholism than from alcoholism. And I can die from alcoholism without ever putting a drink in my body. Because where does my alcoholism sit right now? I've been sober 36 years. I haven't had anything that affect me from the neck up in 36 years. How can I suffer from alcoholism? Because I have this thing, it's a predator, it's a four-letter word called a mind. And that's not going anywhere because I walk into a meeting in AA and I get my 1 year or 5 year chip. Or I've been through the steps. I still got a mind. That's not going anywhere. It doesn't like meditation because it suffocates. It's not useful at that point, so it's going to scream louder. It doesn't like walking into an AA meeting. It doesn't like the steps and wants no part of God because it's useless at that point. That's usually when I'm doing good, when I'm not using my mind. When I'm out of my mind, I'm wonderful. I'm great to be around when I'm out of my mind. When I'm in my mind, it's like, what's up? What's going on with you? And I give you all my restless and discontent stuff, how the world's got it all wrong. That's why we'll not watch the debate tonight. Because if I was mayor, everything would look different. So the question, and I have an assignment to do step one. The question to ask ourselves is, how far away have I gotten from step one if I'm here a little while? And if I'm new, where am I in step one? What I have found experientially, and by not only in my life, but watching others, as I go through the steps, you know, make a decision in 3, do this heavy lifting in 4 through 9, and we're in 10, 11, and 12. Has that driven me deeper into step one and the need for God to take, or somehow I'm thinking I'm God and I've gotten away from step one? And my lips will tell you, oh no, I got all step one, but my actions show something different. How many meetings a week am I making? Do I have a home group? Do I do service? How many men or women am I sponsoring? What am I doing for AA? How am I volunteering my time? What does that really look like? What does my prayer life look like? Do I have a prayer life? If you're sitting here tonight, you don't have a prayer life, please don't leave. You're not a bad AA. But maybe we can take a look at something that we're not doing and maybe go to God and say, help me do this. Awareness is the greatest agent for change. I don't know I have a flat tire. I hear thumping till I pull the car over and say, oh, I have a flat. Prior to that, I don't know what's going on in my car. Awareness is the greatest agent for change. So perhaps if I'm not praying, I'm not meditating, I've gotten way away, far away from step one. If I'm not reading spiritual literature, religious literature. If not attending my religious community. I'll say this on the front. If you have a problem with your religion, that's a resentment. It's fatal. Fix it. Then make a decision. I'm going to go or not. A lot of us are like, I was one of them, come out, oh, church, I can't go there because of all the reasons. And the sponsor, well, you got a resentment. That kills you. Fix it, and then we'll talk about it. How far away have I gotten from step one? I'm very grateful that God has brought me to light with a lot of things in my life. Maybe it's my age. I don't know. I can't believe I'll be 65 in a few weeks, and I don't want to have a talk about that. Just leave that right there. My priest told me there's 3 stages in life, childhood, adulthood, and you look good hood. You know, we get to, oh, you look good. That's not good. But you look at things differently, quite frankly. I still love AA more now than ever, a great appreciation for AA. I just love being in AA. But you look at life different, how fragile that is. That's come to life for me. You always hear sometimes about, you know, who passed away. You know, who's sick. You know, who OD'd and died. You say, wait a minute, I just saw them. Or perhaps people we love and adore get sick and go. And we live in a world of impermanence. That's a big pill to swallow. How quick life is and how fragile it is, how fragile recovery, quite frankly, is. I mean, I can write all the inventory I want, do all the praying I want, make all the meetings I want, do all the good things I want, but I still got this thing I referred to earlier called the thinking mind that's not going anywhere, and it likes to get in. It likes to infiltrate prayer. It likes to infiltrate meditation. And you tell me, this is silly, it takes too long, I feel good right now. I don't need to do those things I did when I was feeling bad. And so I judge my recovery on feeling good. If you're around here a little while, you can be spiritually fit and not feel good. I'm not chasing comfort. I'm chasing recovery. Am I seeking comfort or freedom? Am I speaking? You know, because the things that I think are going to make me comfortable are usually things that aren't spiritual. The things I think are going to make me comfortable might be the things that take me away from God. If I have a pocket full of money and a new car and a box of new cigars and I have a house on the water, I'm going to feel great until the bills come in. Or I just move me into a higher tax bracket. I'm restless and discontented. I get some money. I feel really good. I get the new relationship. I'm in love. Whatever it might be. And then I take over again. Conversely, I know lots of people. I had a sponsor who was dirt poor and was just lit up all the time. Appreciation for everything. How do you get there? That's the guy who's a hero to me. It's easy to be spiritual when I have a lot of money. The new relationship, the honeymoon phase, the new car, it smells nice. The new house, you show everyone off. Look at my house. It gets old. So recovery is awfully fragile. And the last thing is, and hopefully I'll get into step one at some point, is relationships, yeah? I have a mind that wants me dead, will settle for me drunk. So it may not show up with a drink, but it's going to show up in other things, finances. It show up in relationships, show up in health, and a lot of jobs, all that stuff. It'll just get in there. What do my relationships look like? What do they sound like? How much tension do I have when Joe or Mary walks in the room and I have that feeling about here they are, or here she is, or there they are? What kind of tension do I have going on? I need to fix it. They don't. But the first relationship I always have to take a look at is, where am I with the most important relationship I'm ever going to have in my life, and that's with my Creator. What does that look like? What does it sound like? Who am I praying to? And if you knew, it could be vague, and that's fine. As long as I'm praying, any prayer is good prayer. But what does it look like after a while? Who am I praying to? Who is my God? And how often do I return to Him? Scripture said something like, God will give us an equal measure of faith. Everyone. No one's better than the other. Everyone gets the same amount of faith. He gives, here's your faith. Here's your faith. It's all the same. What I do with it, how I cultivate it, is up to me. Am I cultivating my faith? Am I hanging around faithful people? Am I passing around this faith to those who may be unfaithful? They don't believe, and maybe just trying to show them a better way. What does that look like? Because I have found out we go through the steps. I've watched this a million times. We go through the steps, we get lit up, and then we stop. When we get lit up, that's the beginning. The car just pulled out of the driveway. What am I doing about that to enhance it, to cultivate it? And there's plenty of times I've been exhausted and tired and burned out. And I don't want to get to a meal. I just want to stay home and just watch a movie or so, watch a ball game. You know what we do? We did it last night. Two of us were exhausted. We got dressed and went to a meeting. Because one night away, two nights away, three nights away, four nights away, five nights away, and then I lose you. And I become make cameo appearances at AA now. You know? And everyone's making meetings, but I'm starting to die. Because one of the worst feelings I could probably have is feeling separate from AA, like a stranger when I walk in. I used to go here a lot. Now I'm going to hide out and say, shake a few hands, and I feel really awkward. Now I can't wait to get out of here because it's too uncomfortable. And I lost my way. Very frightening. So that's all step one stuff. You know? How far away have I gotten from step one? When I arrived in 1988 by way of 7 treatment centers. And a lot of you guys know my story. I was homeless in 1988. I lived in an abandoned building in Alphabet City in Lower Manhattan. I was addicted, besides booze, for a bunch of years to what I call non-conference approved dry goods. You know, I had holes all over my body because of that stuff and hepatitis C. Now, the last couple of years out there, no matter what I tried to do, I didn't go back to those kind of narcotics, but I couldn't get away from alcohol and pills, no matter what I tried to do. I finish a bottle and throw it up against the wall, it would shatter, and I say, I'm done. And 5 minutes later, I'm panhandling to get another pint of whiskey, because at the end, I had to drink. You can call it a luxury. Maybe you can't. Maybe you can or can't. But I'd have the luxury of saying, well, I'm going to chill and I'll worry about it tomorrow. If I was up, I had to be drinking because it wasn't lasting. Whiskey out of a bottle had a short life now. And I was constantly feeling what I now know, I didn't know then, was withdrawal. It's awful going through alcohol withdrawal and pill withdrawal and you have no money. Because at the beginning, for me, when I start drinking alcohol at 14 years old, it worked. It worked on alcoholism. It worked on this mind. It worked on all the inadequacies, all the fears, all the uncomfortability. Me being me, it went away. All the pain and misery disappeared for a couple of hours. It worked. I'll pour more on this stuff. I didn't know that was happening. I just knew when I drank, no, that stuff went away. Now, civilians get that too. But they pick and choose when they want to go away and drink. I can't. I take a drink, the second drink screams louder than the first one. Civilians will never understand that. Al-Anons won't understand that. They just watch our destruction. And how many of us have been in that place, that really morbid reflection place, that desperate place, whether it's in an abandoned building or it's a park bench or in your living room saying, this has got to stop, I got to stop. Later. I want to stop, but I can't get out. A big book says in Vision for You, the old pleasures were gone. It said drinking meant conviviality at one time, but now the pleasures are gone. There's nothing left. Me and a whiskey bottle, and it owns me. And I got to stop. I got to stop. I must stop. I'm losing everything, and I can't because no willpower fixes it. The love of a child, a wife, a husband, a family, a job, a reputation means nothing. My mind will pay any price tomorrow to seek comfort tonight. And that'll happen in sobriety. Because what alcoholism does, quite frankly, is go underground and resurfaces in other areas. While I'm sober, I'm suffering from alcoholism. Page 52 talks about this. I'm restless here and discontented. And to deal with that, I go on sex sprees. I go on food sprees. I go on gambling sprees. Just name it. I'm spending money I don't have because I'm on a shopping spree. I get some relief in that, or gambling, whatever it might be. And then I merge remorse with a firm resolution, not going to happen again, but being here is too uncomfortable, so I go back in again, and I'll stop tomorrow. I'll worry about it tomorrow. I'll pay any price tomorrow to seek comfort right now, drunk or sober. I've been down that road in my first 6 months. I was Looney Tunes in here, and into my first year, I have a serious eating disorder going on. I'm too embarrassed to tell anyone because after 7 treatment centers, the only people I knew had eating disorders were ladies. So I'm thinking, I got a lady issue. I can't tell guys I have an eating disorder. They're going to think I'm a little weird. I'm not being disrespectful when I say that. But the male ego gets right in there. Hey, we don't have this. And someone told my first sponsor, and unbeknownst to me, he belonged to another fellowship for eating. Is you coming with me? And I went through the steps with that. And that's been arrested a day at a time. But who saw that one coming? But there I was, going to meetings, sober, raising my hand. I have this much time, and I'm going home to throw up after I binge, sneaky eating all of it. But I'm not drinking. I'm still suffering from alcoholism. So I get here in 1988, and I'm in serious trouble. I don't mean with the law. I wasn't that kind. I've been arrested a bunch of times. Thank the good Lord, I've never been to prison. Thanks to my dad's money and connections, I never went to prison. But I've been arrested way too many times. But the law wasn't looking for me. Gangsters weren't looking for me. I was in serious trouble because my body was destroyed. And I wasn't healthy when I got here emotionally. There was no spiritual connection, if you will, either. I can only do as good as the light I'm standing in. I was in a dark shadow trying to figure this out. Desperate to get on your team because I know this is the last house on the block. I need to get on your team. You guys were nice and glossy and shiny and look good and sound good. That's why it's so important when we get an opportunity to speak. We try to dress up for the podium because there's a cat maybe sitting in the meeting. He or she's got one day wondering, oh, this guy looks like he's in the bar too. What's so good about this? I need to give this place respect. So when someone walks in, they say, look, they look good. I look like hell. How do I get there? But I knew nothing about recovery at the 7 treatment centers. I don't even know who Bill and Bob are after 7 treatment centers. I have no clue. They take me to a clubhouse in Minnesota, and they had this 2 big posters, one of Bill and one of Bob. And I said, they're either the union leaders for AA, they're mob guys, Midwest mob guys, or they're the FBI. I mean, I don't know what's going on here, but these are 2 imposing characters. They weren't like smiling and doing selfies for Facebook. They were very serious about it. And I didn't know who they were. And some guy says, those are our co-founders. I didn't even know what co-founder meant. I thought AA just showed up. I knew nothing. He said, well, Bill and Bob. Bill met Bob, and they started what you belong to. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, okay. How's that going to fix me? I didn't know. Knew nothing about the shades. 7 treatment centers. Father Martin Chalk Chalks was hot back then. We used to watch on the cassette tapes. Father Martin doing these chalk talks. And, you know, I don't understand what I got. Because going into my 5th treatment center, I wanted to stop. And 2 days out of my 5th treatment center, I'm blind drunk again. My 6th treatment center, I walk out after 36 hours. Now I just want to die and I try to take my life. I can't stop. I know this is a problem, but someone tell me about a solution. I'm sick of identifying my feelings and knowing my feelings and knowing my triggers and knowing my issues and having clear communication and having I messages instead of you messages. I'm getting drunk. Something's got to change. I don't know. Until I walked into AA busted. Tore up from the floor up, we used to call it. And I happened to be in Minnesota. And those people, and I'm sure all of AA was saying the same exact thing for years, way before I arrived. But something changed in a place of desperation when I feel way too weak and way too vulnerable and way too transparent and way too in the dark. It's when I find God's greatest strength and I see God's light. And what happens, what God does for me, what I couldn't do for myself, was shut the ears to the mind for the first time in my life and open up the ears to the soul. So even though Joe had spoke 100 times before, I heard him for the first time. Mary spoke 100 times before, and I hear her for the first time because I'm listening with this. And I wanted what you had to offer. And they all pointed to the 12 steps out of this book, the sacred fellowship, and giving it all away in a spirit of service called sponsorship. The basic service we provide in Alcoholics Anonymous, Comes of Age talks about that, is sponsored. We have a lot of service commitments, very, very important stuff. But the number one thing we do is pass it on, because I got to, in order to keep it, I got to pass it on. I said, how do you do this? How do I do this? I don't have a clue, but I'm desperate. And desperate's a good thing at the beginning. It's like when I'm out there desperate for a drink or a connection, I will meet Flacco on the Sahara Desert. I will find a connection. I will find a place to get whiskey anywhere. I can do it in here. Yeah? My alcoholism gets a life by taking mine. That's what it does. And it's relentless. And it'll do it while I'm sober. It's constantly pursuing me. But so is God. I don't have to understand God. Step 3 says, as we understood him. Means the group of drunks, that's how I understand God. Good early directions, I understand God. Buddha, Allah, Jesus, that's how I understand God. Got it, that's what I'm going to stop praying to. But doesn't mean I understand how he works. I just need a connection. Something to ignite this thing in here or fan the flame that's in here. And then everything shifts. My point of view shifts. And if I get away from this, I start to revisit page 52 way too often. Now I'm starting to reach out there to feel good, and that's not good. I'm blowing through relationships and jobs. You know, I got 46 different home groups in 6 months. I blow through sponsors. I got like 10 sponsors a month because none of them know what they're doing, you know. I keep meeting crazy women, and the sponsor says, but you keep meeting them. It's you, you know. And so I come back from Minnesota and being exposed to AA in Minnesota was, I was just out there a couple of months ago, and it's home cooking for me. I'm brought back to the innocent climb. And I come home from Minnesota, and I was brought to my first home group where I met the sponsor who was not well received in Brooklyn in our circles. He wasn't really liked by a lot. You know why? He was gruff. He had edges. He never sugarcoated. And he came out of the big book. And a lot of don't drink and go to meetings. That works for some people. That message kills me. The message in the book saved me. And he sounded like the people in Minnesota. And we began a journey, and it was important. He would always tell me, you can't not talk about what you're experiencing, because if I stop talking about what I believe in, I will stop believing in it. And when that stuff starts to happen, I go dormant, and I fall prey to misery and depression, and then I get consumed with me, and I forfeit all the invitations that God is sending to me. I can't hear it anymore. And it happens quick. You need to talk about this. Not ram it down anyone's throat, but when you get up at a podium or share in a meeting, where did you get all this from? Let's talk about the book. And he wasn't well-liked because of that, but we began a journey. I had no clue about this big book. I remember going to different people at my old home group, and there were 18,000 ways to do a fourth step. Check marks, 8 columns, 6 columns, write your autobiography. I'm getting more jammed up now than when I was drunk. I don't know what to do. And my sponsor, and I'll clean up the language, he says, what does the big book say? That's where you're living out of. What do you care what anyone else does? And he wasn't so polite about it either. And we began this journey, and I quickly find out that there's 43 pages in our big book that talks about step one. 43 pages plus doctor's opinion. That's about 53 pages that gets at step one. The body, the mind, and the psychic change that's needed. I know some cats are around talking about this twofold disease. It's not in the book. I mean, I'll sit with you later if you want and show you all the parts in the book that talk about the need to fix this spiritual disconnection, this spiritual malady. That works for them. God bless him. It's not in my big book. And he told me about this threefold illness. 43 pages plus doctor's opinion. I'm still clueless. And what he did, he sat down with me, began to read with me and give me assignments to read out of that. And one of the very first things I had to do was read the first 9 pages of Bill's story and read it, identify with it by saying, did I drink and feel and think like Bill? Yeah, I did. I got it. All the sweet promises, all gone to hell. Over and over and over again. And I wrote out my little story in step one, and it began to break down what I suffer from, that the main problem for me centers in the mind, not the body. The most insane thing I'll ever do is from a place called sober. And I have to pick up the first drink. I have a mind that'll take me back to that which is killing me. The most insane thing I'll ever do is in a place called sober. And that's pick up the first drink or go back to other things that aren't spiritual that are going to eventually take me back to a drink. When I'm untreated, I'm operating out of a place called self-will and self-reliance, and the external world owns me. What you think about me, what you say about me, how the meeting's set up, what kind of format it is, what's going on out there, all of it owns me. That's bondage of self. I need to get unhooked from that. And I had to learn about this body problem that I have. And that was the obvious one. I knew when I pick up a drink, I can't stop drinking. But why? I have 2 brothers. They drink. They don't drink. Sometimes they get drunk. Sometimes they don't get drunk. I mean, they moderate. They control. I hate these people. You get on a plane, you know, you see the guy with the little Mickey Mouse things. This is abuse. I mean, I don't know. Joe and Charlie used to talk about this all the time, and I didn't identify because I didn't fly a lot. I fly a lot now. And you get the guy who orders the little ridiculous thing. It's obscene. and they're on their computer. At some point, he pours it into a whole bunch of ice and water. More abuse. I like the guys who are drunk and disorderly, got to get carted off the plane because we probably hung out together. I identify with those guys. But I have to understand what I suffer from. This thing, this threefold illness, the body problem. That there's no way I control my drinking. That's gone. Maybe never there. And if you're an alcoholic, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You pick up the first drink, the second drink's got to come down. It's screaming louder. Or perhaps I get out of treatment like I did every time. And my fifth treatment center, I swore I am done. And I'm twisting and turning for 2 days. And I go right back to the very thing that I know is not going to end well because I can't stop it. There's no body problem going on there. Now I got this thing called the mind that's called the obsession that'll pretty up a junkyard. It's the thing that sets me going. And once I pick up, I know I'm going to need a second one, but what the hell? I'll figure it out tomorrow. I'll worry about tomorrow. Or the mind says, we're just going to do it one time. You take an edge off. It's just a little bit, a little taste, a little bump, a little something nice. The game's on. We're going to take the edge off. And then I'm robbing houses tomorrow morning. Or my pictures in the post office for committing a horrific crime. Because my first sponsor says, when you're running around untreated or drunk, you realize you're capable of homicide and suicide. You need to understand that. Anything's possible. Today it's breaking into a house. Robbing from your parents, robbing from your children, pushing someone out of the way, ripping off an elderly person. It doesn't stop there. I have no morals. I'm operating out of alcoholism. It doesn't care. So 43 pages, I learn about what I'm up against is this obsession of the mind. Constantly trying to figure out a way I can drink and not get caught. How I could control and regulate my drinking. The freedom I seek today is not for me, but from me. The further I get away from me, the better. And in order for me, quite frankly, in order for me to hear clearly, in order for me to see clearly, I have to first touch the power which is inside of me. In order for me to see clearly what's outside of me and hear what's outside of me, touch the power which is inside of me first. That's not going to happen by willfulness. It's not going to happen by wishing. It's not going to happen by just attending 90 meetings in 90 days. What I needed was this huge, spectacular upheaval which is going to hurt, which is going to make me uncomfortable. It's going to challenge everything I've been attached to and what I believe in, what a man's supposed to be, what a woman's supposed to be, what life is supposed to look like, how much money I'm supposed to have, what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. None of my business. I've had it all wrong. The ego doesn't even want to listen to that, but it must because it's got to get crushed. What had to happen to me in here, and thank the good Lord it happened still, is starve the ego and feed the soul, not the other way around. I have to run for mayor in Alcoholics Anonymous. Where's my seat? I sit down. There's people raising their hand, telling you where they're speaking. I'm speaking here. We're not running for mayor. No one cares. Have a seat and be a spoke in the wheel. But that's how the ego infiltrates. If spirituality doesn't touch every single area of my life, it touches none of my life. I can't be a little spiritual here and Rambo there. Well, this is not AA, and I can't. And I can't pull this off on my own, but God could and would if he was sought. So I got this mind problem. By the way, that mind wants to get involved in every decision I make. And sometimes when we're awake enough, we can hear it knocking on the door. Let me make this. Let me do it this way. I know what's best for you. And I become agitated and doubtful again. I get uncomfortable. I'm aggravated. I'm frustrated. It's because I'm running my life again. You ever notice when you're just moving how light, we're traveling light, when we feel that, God around it, we're just traveling light. And other times when I want to get something and I can't because I think I need to have it, suddenly I'm traveling heavy again because my life has been made my business again. The third piece I suffer from, part of me, is the spiritual malady. Now, if you watch the news, the planet's suffering from a spiritual malady. It's spiritual warfare out there. And I don't want to get on a soapbox, but no politician, no law is going to fix that. No human power. It might change it a little. But spiritual warfare, as an alcoholic, my mind's at war with my spirit all the time. But the thing I seek refuge in is God always wins. No matter how bad it might look, no matter how bad my mind might project it to be, God always wins. He always wins. He never loses. I'm not that good at all to make my life a success, but God is that great. I need to get that at a gut level. So as an alcoholic, I have this thing called a spiritual malady. A book says, I'm suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer. They're clear about that. Then say, listen, this is one of the things you might try. If you're doing nothing on a Saturday, try having a spiritual experience. It might work. They say, no, we're suffering, Peter, you are suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And by the way, when I always taught, when I read the book, is to put my name in there, like as make it first person, me, I, rather than them or we or us. It just hits home a little bit more. I'm suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now, somebody in this room might find another way, and I tip my hat to you. I'm not a model or an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, just this is how I do it. There's one way I know how to do this, and this is what I do. Some might say it's too rigid, it's too strict. It really isn't. I'll tell you what's painful, doing without it. I'd rather bear the pain of waiting for God than going on without God, quite frankly. God's been incredibly patient with me. 36 years now I'm in this. Thank you, God. 36 years been incredibly patient with me. Some of my bonehead moves. And some of the nonsense I'll pray, I see the Lord, get up, and I turn into John Rambo. I know what it needs. You know, God's saying, oh, no, here he goes again. You know, what happened? You got up off your knee. What's going on? You know, that kind of thing. Been incredibly patient with me. He's also pursuing, and the thing, great thing about God, he's going to any lengths to have a relationship with everyone in this room, actually the whole planet. Very few are listening. As an alcoholic, I must listen. Even if I miss it, I'm still willing to listen. I'm willing to listen to something other than me. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to make mistakes. Step 11 talks about that. I'll pay for this all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. He knows that, but I'm listening. My ear is not looking to listen to me all the time. Even though I come up with some really cool stuff sometimes. It sounds really good on paper. Now see, Marion, what are you thinking? She says, are you nuts? You know. My sponsor says, and you came up with that all on your own, huh? Jesus. I just want to go to something here real quick before we run out of time. Vision for you says this: for most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. So that's the early days when we're having a blast and we're really good looking or pretty when we're drunk, you know, and the person we're talking to is a knockout, you know, and the club or the bar is the place to be. The music, suddenly I become a musician and a singer, you know, just everything's good. We're floating around the room. For me, I had beer muscles. I got to be about 6'3". I looked like Elvis Presley. I mean, everything was cool. Those are the early days. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It means joyous intimacy. And sometimes with intimacy with someone, I don't know their name until I wake up and say, how'd I meet you? And friends, and the feeling that life is good. But not so with, remember the early days, you know, so you go and drinking and you're all jacked up or going drinking or somebody has a fancy bottle of whiskey and let's pour some drinks. And long ago, now I'm a scavenger out there at 3 o'clock in the morning in the same clothes I've been wearing for 6 months. And my body's showing it's deteriorating from alcohol. They were but memories. Never could we recapture. The old pleasures were gone. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. It goes on to say, the less people tolerate us, the more we withdraw from society, from life itself, as we became subjects of King Alcohol. It's his kingdom. And I can't get out. It's gated in. Shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that his loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places or even people, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did, but usually the sun comes up. You know? Is it the worst thing in the world when the sun comes up? It's like, oh no. And the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I was driving some sort of Pontiac a billion years ago, and I was in the city on 5th Avenue and 17th Street, right across the street from used to be a Bonnie's Men's Department Store. And I was having a problem with a guy in that neighborhood. And I was waiting for this young lady to come out of this, and the front was a pizza store, and the back wasn't. And she was in the back bringing some stuff out. And I see this guy come out of the doorway with a brown paper bag. And I recognize him. And I'm saying, I'm hoping there's whiskey in that brown paper bag, but it wasn't. And he started walking towards my car. She jumped in, and I drove away. And he literally kneeled down on 5th Avenue and 17th Street on one knee and started firing shots at my car. He's a bad guy. And I got home, shortly before the sun came up. And I parked my car. I was still living at my dad's house about 2 or 3 blocks away. And like a good alcoholic, I wake up nice and early. My dad's banging on the door. It's like noon. And he says, where's your car? And I'm just hungover, and I'm a mess. And I says, I parked on the corner, no parking spots last night. He says, go get it. Now, it sounds like, well, why don't you just take off? If you knew my dad in his heyday, you just did what he did and took the heat, because I could have taken off. And first he went down to the corner, came back. There's no car there. He's go get it. Now the pot is boiling. And I walk a few blocks and I bring the car back. And thank God it was a small caliber gun. The back window was blown out. There were holes in the trunk and one in the roof. And when my dad saw this, they heard him screaming every four-letter word a mile away. He was very intimidating. I was shaking in my shoes. It's the first time I thought my dad was going to just put his hands on me. And we went inside. And this went on for an hour. And my brothers chime in, and they're screaming at me about what a disgrace I am, the shame I'm bringing to the family. And I got to sit there and take it. About an hour or so goes by, and things start to come down. My dad calls me into the kitchen. He says, sit down. He says, you know the guy who did this? I says, yeah. He says, you know his name? He says, yeah. He says, I want to go with you to the city with a couple of my friends tomorrow. I want you to point them out and then walk away. I know what my dad was going to do. My brother ran to the kitchen and says, he's not worth it. Because of my stuff, my dad was about to commit a major crime and have everyone involved with that for my nonsense. Because he came from the school, you hurt my family, right or wrong, I'm coming for you. That was about to take place. The old pleasures were long gone. My whole family was wrapped up in my nonsense. They were taken hostage, and they didn't even know it. Was that enough to make me say, I need to go get help, I need to go to church, I need to go to treatment? No, because once I got out, I continued doing it. And I drove around with a car with busted windows and bags over it, clear plastic bags, and bullet holes in it. Because it ran, it's good enough. And it continued and continued and continued. And every once in a while I get this little glimpse of this must stop, but I can't because I need a drink. Then I get into treatment and mine says, okay, you got your 30 days. We're going to have just one drink, just one drink. Just to take the edge off, settle the belly, the detox, you still got post-acute withdrawal stuff going on. Just one little drink, smoke a little weed, just take the edge off and I'm right back again because that's what it does. Takes me back to that which is killing me. I said it a million times tonight, I'll pay any price tomorrow to see comfort tomorrow. This is why it's so important for me to go through the steps once a year. I can't let dust accumulate on the soul. I can't have plaque on the soul. I know a lot of folks who do these 12-step series, we don't even have a sponsor. God bless them. go through the steps once every blue moon. I want to hear someone who's current, who's in this book. If it says big book, 12 steps, I want to hear someone who's living in that. Not perfect. But for me as an individual, a member in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's really important that I stay current and talk to my sponsor and people close to me about where I am currently. How are my finances? How are my relationships? What kind of noise I got in my head? It's all untreated alcoholism. I start to pay attention to that. That thought life creates my current reality. I'm running around AA untreated. But I got this reputation to protect of whatever that might be, and I can't tell anyone. And I don't even realize that the ego has reemerged. Thibaut talks about this. Now I'm seeing through the ego and hearing through the ego and speaking through the ego, and it builds a fortress that I can't sit down with my best friend and say, I'm not okay. I'm afraid again. Life's devouring me. It's become my master again. It's all part of alcoholism. That will take me back to the bar where I order a drink, just like that, or go cop drugs. That's what it does. Any chronic relapse in this room will say, he's right, because I was one. Alcoholism doesn't announce its arrival. Hey, Pete, tomorrow morning I'm going to show up and wreck your life. It just wrecks my life. That's what it does. And all the while, I'm kind of walking around saying, I'm okay. But inwardly, I know I'm not. Alcoholism, it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and incredibly patient. I'm running out of time. I kind of got lost here. What I hope to talk about is the two parts of step one. God willing, next week, we're going to be here 4th of July, and we can break down what the shades say about the first half of step one and the second half of step one about what powerlessness really is. So anyway, that's all I got, guys. Peace.
All right, let's give Peter another round of applause. And we're going to have our secretary report.
Hi, my name is Brandon. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. We also have QR codes in Zoom and on the chair backs in case you don't have any cash. I've asked Nathan to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in AA identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
My name is Nathan. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. The present of conflict to some alcoholics, if we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we're not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol, which remains with us from our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, rather than in his body, pages 23 of the Big Book. We are now sane, we're alcoholic, we are concerned, consequently, we have recovered.
A 1940 style Big Book sponsorship from the forward to the second edition. Alcoholics Anonymous of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, came to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Is anyone needing a sponsor? No? Okay. Can the recovered alcoholics please raise your hand? All right. And then if you were too shy, come stand up by the piano and somebody will help you. And then it is the last meeting of the month. Is anybody celebrating a year or more? How many you got?
Sunday was 36.
Nice. You? Congratulations. Nice. Congratulations. All right, and then we have screen announcements. Intergroup is where you can buy your AA-related literature and medallions. Intergroup is also responsible for creating our Where and When and scheduling the AA hotline. Stop by and visit them. All right. Broward County Institutions Committee is responsible for bringing meetings into places where people like us can't get to an AA meeting, such as jails, detoxes, and rehabs. They meet monthly to organize the meeting schedules at the 12-step house. Do we have any members of BCIC here? All right. If you have any questions, Ms. Kelly will be able to help you. All right. And so here's some upcoming. Okay. The Big Book Study Workshop is our Monday, and of course, here's our home groups, Monday night's Big Book Study Workshop, where the Big Book comes alive. We have some new co-facilitators, Peter, Jay, and Mike Chase, of course. And then we have Peter for another 11 weeks. All right, we also have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book Dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
We have tonight's session and all past speakers podcasted at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everybody again to the Monday night Big Book Study, and those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle, and then we can close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I am desperately in need of restoration. No! just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. On my own, I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. When you laughing, bah, 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 when you laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
shine, let it shine, 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 let it shine. All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. I see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, hang them out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, they're green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. This broken man had traveled far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away, and it's just about to start. Plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come since when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's all right. Oh, man.
going on 10 years old that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
I think you know this one, don't you? Just won't set me free. Well, clap your hands if you believe me, tell.